Chapter 45. To take all the bets that offer, and if a man wants larger odds, I will give him all he requires. But he ought to find out whether I am betting on what is termed sure thing or not before he ventures his money, and he can do that by going to a public library and examining the London Saturday Review of October 8th, which contains the real critique. Bless me, some people thought that I was the old person. P.S.S. I cannot resist the temptation to toss in this most savory thing of all, this easy, graceful, philosophical disquisition, with his happy, chirping confidence. It is from the Cincinnati Inquirer. Nothing is more uncertain than the value of a fine cigar. 9 smokers out of 10 would prefer an ordinary domestic article, 3 for a quarter, to 50 cent Partaga, if kept in ignorance of the cost of the latter. The flavor of the Partaga is too delicate for palates that have been accustomed to Connecticut seed leaf. So it is with humor. The finer it is in quality, the more danger of its not being recognized at all. Even Mark Twain has been taken in by an English review of his Innocents Abroad. Mark Twain is by no means a coarse humorist, but the Englishman's humor is so much finer than his that he mistakes it for solid earnest and acts most consumedly. A man who cannot learn stands in his own light. Hereafter, when I write an article which I know to be good, but which I may have reason to fear will not, in some quarters, be considered to amount to much, coming from an American, I will aver that an Englishman wrote it, and that it is copied from a London journal. And then I will occupy a back seat, and enjoy the cordial applause. Still later, Mark Twain at last sees that the Saturday Review's criticism of his Innocents Abroad was not serious, and he is intensely mortified at the thought of having been so badly sold. He takes the only course left him, and in the last Galaxy claims that he wrote the criticism himself, and published it in the Galaxy to sell the public. This is ingenious, but unfortunately it is not true. If any of our readers will take the trouble to call at this office, we still show them the original article in the Saturday Review of October 8th, which, on comparison, will be found to be identical with the one published in the Galaxy. The best thing for Mark to do will be to admit that he was sold, and say no more about it. The above is from the Cincinnati Inquirer, and is a falsehood. Come to the proof. If the Inquirer people, through any agent, will produce at the Galaxy office a London Saturday Review of October 8th, containing an article which, on comparison, will be found to be identical with the one published in the Galaxy, I will pay to that agent $500 cash. Moreover, if at any specified time I fail to produce at the same place a copy of the London Saturday Review of October 8th, containing a lengthy criticism upon the Innocents Abroad, entirely different, in every paragraph and sentence, from the one I published in the Galaxy, I will pay to the Inquirer agent another $500 cash. I offer Sheldon and Company, Publishers, 500 Broadway, New York, as my backers. Anyone in New York, authorized by the Inquirer, will receive prompt attention. It is an easy and profitable way for the Inquirer people to prove that they have not uttered a pitiful, deliberate falsehood in the above paragraphs. Will they swallow that falsehood ignominiously, or will they send an agent to the Galaxy office? I think the Cincinnati Inquirer must be edited by children. A letter to the Secretary of the Treasury, Riverdale on the Hudson, October 15, 1902. The Hon. The Secretary of the Treasury, Washington, D.C. : Sir, prices for the customary kinds of winter fuel having reached an altitude which puts them out of the reach of literary persons in straitened circumstances, I desire to place with you the following order. 45 tons best old dry government bonds, suitable for furnace, gold 7%, 1864, preferred. 12 tons early greenbacks, range size, suitable for cooking. 8 barrel season 25 and 50 cent postal currency, vintage of 1866, eligible for kindlings. Please deliver with all convenient dispatch at my house in Riverdale at lowest rates for spot cash, and send bill to your obliged servant, Mark Twain, who will be very grateful, and will vote right. Amended obituaries, to the editor. Sir, I am approaching 70, it is in sight, it is only 3 years away. Necessarily, I must go soon. It is but matter of course wisdom, then, that I should begin to set my worldly house in order now, so that it may be done calmly and with thoroughness, in place of waiting until the last day, when, as we have often seen, the attempt to set both houses in order at the same time, has been marred by the necessity for haste, and by the confusion and waste of time arising from the inability of the notary and the ecclesiastic to work together harmoniously, taking turn about and giving each other friendly assistance, not perhaps in fielding, which could hardly be expected, but at least in the minor offices of keeping game and umpiring, by consequence of which conflict of interests and absence of harmonious action a draw has frequently resulted, where this ill fortune could not have happened, if the houses had been set in order one at a time, and hurry avoided by beginning in season, and giving to each the amount of time fairly and justly proper to it. In setting my earthly house in order I find it of moment, that I should attend in person to one, or two matters which men in my position have long had the habit of leaving wholly to others, with consequences often most regrettable. I wish to speak of only one of these matters at this time. Obituaries. Of necessity, an obituary is a thing which cannot be so judiciously edited by any hand, as by that of the subject of it. In such a work it is not the facts that are of chief importance, but the light which the obituarist shall throw upon them, the meaning which he shall dress them in, the conclusions which he shall draw from them, and the judgments which he shall deliver upon them. The verdicts, you understand. That is the danger line. In considering this matter, in view of my approaching change, it has seemed to me wise to take such measures as may be feasible, to acquire, by courtesy of the press, access to my standing obituaries, with the privilege, if this is not asking too much, of editing, not their facts, but their verdicts. This, not for the present profit, further than as concerns my family, but as a favorable influence usable on the other side, where there are some who are not friendly to me. With this explanation of my motives, I will now ask you of your courtesy, to make an appeal for me to the public press. It is my desire, that such journals and periodicals as have obituaries of me lying in their pigeonholes, with a view to sudden use someday, will not wait longer, but will publish them now, and kindly send me a marked copy. My address is simply New York City. I have no other that is permanent and not transient. I will correct them, not the facts, but the verdicts, striking out such clauses as could have a deleterious influence on the other side, and replacing them with clauses of a more judicious character. I should, of course, expect to pay double rates for both the omissions and the substitutions, and I should also expect to pay quadruple rates for all obituaries which proved to be rightly and wisely worded in the originals, thus requiring no emendations at all. It is my desire to leave these amended obituaries neatly bound behind me as a perennial consolation and entertainment to my family, and as an heirloom which shall have a mournful but definite commercial value for my remote posterity. I beg, sir, that you will insert this advertisement, 1TEO, Agate, inside, and send the bill to yours very respectfully. Mark Twain. P.S.S. For the best obituary one suitable for me to read in public, and calculated to inspire regret, I desire to offer a prize, consisting of a portrait of me done entirely by myself in pen and ink without previous instructions, being warranted to be the kind used by the very best artists. A monument to Adam, someone has revealed to the Tribune, that I once suggested to Rev. Thomas K. Beecher, of Elmira, New York, that we get up a monument to Adam, and that Mr. Beecher favored the project. There is more to it than that. The matter started as a joke, but it came somewhat near to materializing. It is long ago, 30 years. Mr. Darwin's Descent of Man has been in print 5 or 6 years, and the storm of indignation raised by it was still raging in pulpits and periodicals. In tracing the genesis of the human race back to its sources, Mr. Darwin had left Adam out altogether. We had monkeys, and hissing lynx, and plenty of other kinds of ancestors, but no Adam. Jesting with Mr. Beecher and other friends in Elmira, I said there seemed to be a likelihood that the world would discard Adam and accept the monkey, and that in the course of time Adam's very name would be forgotten in the earth. Therefore this calamity ought to be averted. A monument would accomplish this, and Elmira ought not to waste this honorable opportunity to do Adam a favor and herself a credit. Then the unexpected happened. Two bankers came forward and took hold of the matter not for fun, not for sentiment, but because they saw in the monument certain commercial advantages for the town. The project had seemed gently humorous before, it was more than that now, with this stern business gravity injected into it. The bankers discussed the monument with me. We met several times. They proposed an indestructible memorial, to cost $25,000. The insane oddity of a monument set up in a village to preserve a name that would outlast the hills and the rocks without any such help, would advertise Elmira to the ends of the earth and draw custom. It would be the only monument on the planet to Adam, and in the matter of interest and impressiveness could never have a rival until somebody should set up a monument to the Milky Way. People would come from every corner of the globe and stop off to look at it. No tour of the world would be complete that left out Adam's monument. Elmira would be a mecca. There would be pilgrim ships at pilgrim rates, pilgrim specials on the continent's railways. Libraries would be written about the monument. Every tourist would Kodak it. Models of it would be for sale everywhere in the earth. Its form would become as familiar as the figure of Napoleon. One of the bankers subscribed $5,000, and I think the other one subscribed half as much, but I do not remember with certainty now whether that was the figure or not. We got designs made, some of them came from Paris. In the beginning, as a detail of the project, when it was yet a joke, I had framed a humble and beseeching and perfervid petition to Congress begging the government to build the monument, as a testimony of the great republic's gratitude to the father of the human race, and as a token of her loyalty to him in this dark day of humiliation, when his older children were doubting and deserting him. It seemed to me that this petition ought to be presented. Now it would be widely and feelingly abused and ridiculed and cursed, and would advertise our scheme and make our ground floor stock go off briskly. So I sent it to General Joseph R. Hawley, who was then in the House, and he said he would present it. But he did not do it. I think he explained that, when he came to read it, he was afraid of it. It was too serious, too gushy, too sentimental. The House might take it for earnest. We ought to have carried out our monument scheme. We could have managed it without any great difficulty, and Elmira would now be the most celebrated town in the universe. Very recently I began to build a book in which one of the minor characters touches incidentally upon a project for a monument to Adam, and now the Tribune has come upon a trace of the forgotten jest of 30 years ago. Apparently mental telegraphy is still in business. It is odd, but the freaks of mental telegraphy are usually odd. A humane word from Satan. The following letter, signed by Satan and purporting to come from him, we have reason to believe, was not written by him, but by Mark Twain. Editor. To the editor of Harper's Weekly. Dear sir and kinsman, let us have done with this frivolous talk. The American board accepts contributions from me every year. Then why shouldn't it from Mr. Rockefeller? In all the ages, 3/4 of the support of the great charities has been conscience money, as my books will show. Then what becomes of the sting when that term is applied to Mr. Rockefeller's gift? The American board's trade is financed mainly from the graveyards. Bequests, you understand. Conscience money. Confession of an old crime and deliberate perpetration of a new one. For deceased's contribution is a robbery of his heirs. Shall the board decline bequests, because they stand for one of these offenses every time and generally for both? Allow me to continue. The charge must persistently and resentfully and remorselessly dwelt upon is that Mr. Rockefeller's contribution is Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.